Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to our first ever podcast, Helping Your Daughter Manage Her Emotional Health. This podcast is part of a program of partnership with you as parents in supporting the emotional health of your daughter. We're going to talk about issues we've identified as being challenges to their academic progress and therefore their emotional health. We know from experience that if your daughter is not happy, she will not thrive, either academically or personally. In order to help us look at strategies for young people, we've asked Melinda Thurley, an experienced life coach, to join us today. Welcome, Melinda. As we start, Melinda, before we go on to our podcast, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the work that you do with young people and the issues that you come across.
Thank you, Mrs. Berry. Well, I've been working as a coach for several years now, working with people in all different roles, and been helping people in a variety of ways make sense of some of the issues that arise for them. So quite frequently it's issues connected with stress, workload, imbalance, not being able to have clear boundaries between home and work, things like self-esteem, imposter syndrome, and the negative self-thoughts, and also helping people reconnect to purpose and meaning, and then other things like anxiety, self-doubt. So quite a variety of issues, and help people make sense of that and find a way forward to reconnect to feeling better about themselves again.
Lovely. And thank you once again for joining us today. Obviously, we have various issues that are quite prevalent here at Oxford High School, and one of them is perfectionism and overwork. I wonder what you might advise for parents that have a daughter that has issues of this sort.
Well, I use a model, which is really like a metaphor of the brain, developed by Professor Paul Gilbert, based on the three emotions regulation system, as a way to just understand what's going on for individuals. And it looks at three key emotional centres. One is the threat centre, which is the one that's wired for danger, so therefore is constantly scanning for problems and threats and will react accordingly, and it will produce things like anger and disgust, and it works on the basis of better safe than sorry, so overcompensates, so hence mm-hmm. There may only be one occasion out of 10 that the reaction's necessary, but it's already reacting. And that generates our fight, flight or freeze response to danger, and produces the stress hormones, cortisol and adrenaline. Then the second one is the drive brain. And that is the one that I'm most interested here with this particular question. And that is the one that is all about achievement and wanting to do well because you receive feedback. And that produces dopamine, which makes us curious, excited and brave. And it's a reward-based emotional centre. So we tend to want to reinforce those feelings, and dopamine has an addictive quality, so therefore you want more of that. Mm-hmm. And so therefore somebody who's very focused and driven will continue to do more of something to get more of that dopamine response, and to therefore will want to receive the high accolade and feedback, positive feedback and so forth. The third emotional centre is the soothe centre, which is the rest, slow down, recuperate piece, and that produces oxytocin and endorphins that help get the feel-good feeling, the relaxing feeling, the positive love bonding feeling. And ideally, you want those three systems all in equilibrium, operating at the same level. But there are times where threat and drive, if they're allowed to become too noisy and dialed up, then they start to dominate and it produces a toxic situation. And you can see where somebody becomes more and more driven. Because the threat is, if you don't do this, you won't achieve. So that they start to feed off each other. And unless we nurture enough of the soothe side, they continue to get a lot of airtime and influence. So paying attention to our soothe part of our brain is really, really important. But when we feel threatened or very focused on achievement, we tend to ignore that piece. And I see it in a lot of high-achieving executives in organisations, especially in stressful situations. You can see how that can start to ratchet up. So the upshot is that if the drive brain gets overstimulated, then there's obviously some impact of that. So thinking about individuals who are overworking and perfectionist, if they've got a tendency to be orientated that way, it's how can we help them access the soothe part of the brain more? So to help individuals think of other things rather than just work and keep. And in a way, this is an ideal time to do that because it's laying down the foundations for the future. Thinking about individuals because they're otherwise at threat of potential burning out. So it's recognising that constant work all the time does need some structure and boundaries. Really important to have boundaries, and how, think about things that can bring the soothe part of the brain into play so that's starting to manage the drive and threat toxic situation. So things like what relaxing things do they enjoy doing? Having a nice bath, having hot chocolate, taking time out, going for a walk, petting an animal is a really positive thing because that produces oxytocin. So some activities that are not just totally academically driven, focused activities that enable this production of oxytocin to happen. And then there's also thinking about the messaging in the home environment. What are we role modelling as parents at the home environment? If we're all working flat out ourselves, because we've all got very busy jobs, what message is that telling our children as well? So there is something about actually having a time when everybody stops and time together as a family and time for a bit of fun and relaxation. So the ability to switch off is really, really important and to have downtime.
Melinda, thank you. That's really interesting. So what I picked up in the midst of that is it's not just for the perfectionist or the overworker, but generally, as parents, we have to really think about what we're modelling to our young people, both what we say, I guess, and what we don't say. One of the issues that is often joked about by teachers is the girl who gets 95% and goes, I didn't get the other five. Or the parent who, when hearing on the 95%, goes, what did everyone else get? How might a parent role model more positively in those sort of situations where the expectation is felt not to have been achieved?
I think I go back to the growth mindset here, where it's very much more about focused on what the individual has done and the effort and contribution rather than just the result. Because through recognising the contribution that the individual has made, it's saying to the individual, that's fantastic. What a great outcome. But what good effort that you put into that, recognising the effort of the individual and where they've put the extra hours or time to do that, rather than you didn't get 100%. Is going to get a much more positive response from the child because they're being recognised for what they've done, the contribution they've made, and will want to do that again next time.
So you could celebrate how efficiently their revision had worked, or that they'd learned a new way of doing a mind map and that had given them an ability to learn a lot more efficiently than before. So you could look at how they got about getting that result. Is that really what you were?
It's about what they've done rather than focusing on the end results. It's about the effort and contribution that they have put in and recognising that.
Yes, how can we as a parent practically they do that?
As parents, we have an opportunity to demonstrate and show to our young people that actually we don't always get 100%. We don't always achieve the top mark, and that actually that hasn't stopped us. We're still human, and it's part of how we all are. But also from a resilient point of view, allowing our young people to learn from that and grow from that, and what could they do differently next time, consider what the challenge could be going forward, but enable them to find ways to resolve that, but enable them to be able to cope with that, because there will be other times going forward where things will not go completely according to plan. And being able to deal with that is a really important part of managing in everyday life.
So can we now look at those individuals that may not necessarily be at the top?
They're not perfectionists.
But they're actually feeling that they're not worthy because they're not at the top. They may be towards the bottom, and they're feeling their esteem is not good because they're thinking, I'm surrounded by people that are much brighter than I am. They're here for a reason. Everybody here is bright, but there are obviously brighter girls than others. And what would we say to a parent of a girl that was feeling that she was always not the best? She was always struggling to keep up.
I think one of the most important things here is to recognise what the individual is about as a total human, not just from an academic achievement perspective, and pay attention to the other parts of that human, and reinforce those areas and remind them of those other things that they can do, and positively discuss it and be open. But if the environment is always about academic achievement and there's just one approach, then or one area that's always discussed, then it just helps reinforce that negative self-talk for the individual. So it's trying to find other areas to recognise and appreciate, and certainly I always talk about a 3-to-1 ratio of positivity as opposed to negativity. So always positive reinforcement of the good things about individuals, and then really trying to understand perhaps what is underpinning some of that self-esteem. Is it issues reinforced by society, the environment that they're in, or is it just totally being reinforced in the home environment? So quite a few areas to try and understand and see what's impacting and influencing the child, and try and talk with them to see if there's different ways of looking at this, that the current way may not be the only way. Quite a useful little technique is to ask some simple 3 questions. What's the best that can happen here? What's most likely to happen? And what's the worst that can happen? And that helps the young person explore the different options and also name the situation. And then you can move on from that to get an understanding of what beliefs are influencing the individual and get an understanding of what it is that's driving that low self-esteem, what the belief is that's underpinning it, and then give the opportunity to dispute and debate it, think differently about it. Are there other ways of looking at this to perhaps encourage a different perspective and a different way of moving forward?
I think communication all the way through this is vitally important when we talk to our daughters about what they're worried about and what they're anxious about. And if we can open up communication through any of the methods that you've suggested, it's a win-win for both parties, I think.
So, Melinda, you've covered a lot there. You've given us a few ideas of helping the perfectionist, the overworker, with that idea of the different bits of the brain, the threat, the drive, and the soothe centre. Then we've heard quite a bit about how, as parents, we need to look at how what we're saying and how we model things to our young people. And then you've mentioned self-worth and helping them to reframe the inner critic inside them. What, simply as we finish, because we've raised a lot of issues, what practical things could a parent take away that they can really, if you like, put into action in the next week and going forward, obviously, into the future for their young people?
I mean, these are a range of issues. That's the first thing I would say. They all have slightly different ways forward, but there are some common themes all the way through. And one in particular for me is the role modelling piece, reinforcing the growth mindset, positive reinforcement, recognising three positives as opposed to three negatives. So for every negative, always find three positive things to reinforce. And being in the role modelling as a parent, being open about where things haven't gone so well for you as a parent, being open and transparent so that our young people recognise it's not just them that things may not go 100% for, but that is part of life. And enabling our young people to empower them to also sort some of their issues for themselves rather than have them fixed. So allow them to find solutions and ways forward through consultation and discussion with the parent. I think it's really important to have boundaries. So it's clarity of boundaries and also the importance of accessing that soothe brain so that there's downtime, proper relaxing downtime to allow for the production of the oxytocin, the feel-good hormone to be produced. So, and I was also, just my other thought was thinking about, well, what strategies do our young people have to help them cope with the everyday, and what ones are helpful and what ones are less helpful, and try and find ways to focus more on those helpful strategies and do less of the unhelpful.
Thank you, Melinda, for working with us this afternoon. You've given us some really good insights into the issues that we deal with quite regularly here at school. As a parent, if you've been listening to us and you'd like to hear more about any of the subjects that we've talked about today, there will be an opportunity for you to give us some feedback and also to suggest subjects you'd like us to talk about. We do hope you've enjoyed listening to us today, and we do hope that you've found the things we've talked about useful. Thank you.